What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prof G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prof G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prof G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to another Spotify Green Room Q&A here. Detroit Lions talk here on our Pride of Detroit podcast feed. My name is Jeremy Reisman. I'm the editor-in-chief of Pride of Detroit. If you don't know what this is, we do Saturday morning Q&As with Lions fans to talk Lions right here on the Spotify Green Room app. Download it on whatever platform you have. It's available. With me, as always, two co-hosts. First, let's go to Ryan Matthews at Ryan_POD, senior editor at Pride of Detroit. How are we doing, Ryan?
I'm doing fantastic, and you're doing wonderful, honey.
Thanks. I rebounded really good there, all right?
And you did.
To know that there was a first take that was not recorded for the podcast.
It was really reminiscent of like a train just starting and chugging and chugging. and then it was just right on its way. You're awesome.
Oh, appreciate that. That didn't sound condescending at all. our other co-host, who is laughing in the chat room at me, Eric Schlitt is here as well, at Eric Schlitt on Twitter, the managing editor of Pride of Detroit. Eric, how we doing, dude?
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
Thank you. I'm doing fantastic.
That is great, man. I'm happy to hear that.
Well, all right. I don't know what's happening right now. Let's just jump into it. This is our final Spotify Green Room before training camp. I would call it the final Spotify Green Room of the offseason because things are actually going to start happening Wednesday. I'm very excited about it. I hope you all are excited about it. We have a ton of people requesting to join us, so we're just going to jump right into it. We've got first Dan is on the line, our good friend Dan. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, Jeremy, and I honestly, Ryan didn't lie. That first take was just awesome. I'm glad to take that with me today.
Thank you.
But I also wanted to just be a British prick and say, I believe it's Schadenfreude, so we can do Schadenfreude. I'm not actually sure I've got a question, but I'm just wanted to say hey and thanks for a fantastic summer. But I'd be interested to see what you guys think about Aaron Rodgers, and I'll just sign off. Thanks, guys.
All right, Dan, thanks for the compliment. Let's jump into the Aaron Rodgers stuff because that is hot right now on a Saturday morning because Friday was an eventful day for the Packers. First, it comes out that Davante Adams has cut off contract talks with the Packers and things are in a bad place between him and the Packers. Then it comes out that sports books are taking the Packers off the board for a lot of bets because they believe Aaron Rodgers is going to retire next week. And then at the crack of midnight, Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams get together. They post a picture of Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan, clearly referencing The Last Dance. The question is whether this is The Last Dance in 2021 or if that Last Dance has already happened. So, Ryan, I want to throw it to you because I know you got some takes on this. What is going on in Green Bay right now?
Chaos. And we should all just revel in it, you know?
Yeah,
like it's about time that we see some dysfunction happening over in Green Bay, like some true, honest to goodness, just chaos. And you know, I saw that you either retweeted or you liked a tweet from Andrew Brandt, who had a tweet this morning that was like, you know what, I'm so glad I'm not part of that Packers front office now because it's just drama.
Yeah,
and you know what, I think that's the perfect way to encapsulate it. I know. It wasn't Florio, was it? It was MDS who had the the post about how, you know, it would be so much easier if the big boys Davante Adams and Aaron Rodgers would use their words instead of sending cryptic messages Like this, you know, photo of Pippen and Michael Jordan kind of referencing The Last Dance, to just say what their intentions are. But you know what? I think at this point, Davante Adams and Aaron Rodgers, they're playing this the way that they need to play it. And all the cards are in their hand, and they control everything. And, you know, Wednesday, I'm just as excited for Lions training camp to start as I am to see what the hell is going to happen in Green Bay. Like, it's almost more exciting, like, to be honest, just because this is going to change the landscape of the NFC North as we know it. Because, Jeremy, you mentioned that not only did the sportsbooks take off Green Bay in terms of, like, their season props and playoff odds and things like that, but, like, they took everything in the NFC North off the books. Like,
right.
It was one of those things where it's like this would have an impact that's far-reaching and far greater than just, you know, the Green Bay Packers. It's the NFC North. I think they even adjusted the MVP odds for Patrick Mahomes because, I mean, right. That's how big this would be if Aaron Rodgers doesn't end up playing for the Green Bay Packers. And I'm still not willing to say it's done because I feel like that's just jinxing it. But it certainly seems like there's no repairing this relationship between the two of them because even Aaron Rodgers wasn't willing to you know, renegotiate his contract and make himself like the highest paid player in football.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I really feel like the interpretation of this Instagram bomb, it really feels to me like, all right, well, if you guys aren't going to negotiate with us, we're going to make one last run at this and then blow it all up. Like, I feel like they're both sticking around for one more year, but I'm curious what you think, Eric. Is that your interpretation of yesterday's events as well?
Well, you know, I think if Rodgers really wants to be a baller, he will retire on the eve of training camp by faxing his retirement letter to a newspaper across the river from Green Bay.
I'm shaking right now.
I'm in the same boat as you are, I believe, Jeremy, in the fact that I'm not willing to believe anything at this point. Mm-hmm. This offseason has been relatively quiet compared to previous ones, but there's always some sort of drama like this in the NFL. Like, yeah. The thing is there's more than just the Packers going on that is creating like massive drama around the league. You got Bills players fighting on social media over vaccination statuses. You have this
Deshaun Watson.
You have the right. Exactly. You got all of this stuff. There's so much stuff coming to a head right now because it's like you've got a week left, and so it's like everybody's unloading all of their drama right now ahead of training camp. So I don't know how much I trust the website that is reporting that he's going to retire, and I think that's part of my trepidation. Also, I think as a Lions fan, I don't believe it.
Right.
Right. Right. Just because it just wouldn't be in the Lions' realm of luck. But, man, it sure looks like things are, dissolving, right? I mean, I don't know how else to look at it, but I'm willing to be more patient before I start to get my hopes up. That's for certain.
Well, I think there's one thing I want to say about the whole sportsbook thing, and like Chris dropped a tweet in our Slack that really goes to the point. But like the idea that all these sportsbooks are taking these odds off the line and not making them bettable, like it doesn't necessarily mean that somebody has like intel that like Rodgers is going to retire. I think what it is I think it's sportsbook saying like, we really don't know what's going to happen. So like, let's cool the jets on this for a weekend. And then we can go back to betting as usual, like on Wednesday, when we find out whether or not Rodgers shows up to training camp. Like, I think that's really like Vegas kind of like safeguarding itself rather than throwing caution to the wind. You know what I mean? Like, it's a business, and you got to follow where the money goes. But I truly think that they wouldn't take it off the books completely unless there wasn't something going on or they were worried about something. You know why? Because Vegas wants your money.
And you would know that more than any of us, I suppose.
Because they have a lot of mine. Thank you.
All right, let's move on from the Rodgers talk. Let's bring in our next caller. Michael is here. Michael, how are we doing today?
Doing great. I got to tell you how important you guys are to me. I have one live notification that pops up out of all my apps on my phone. It's you guys in the green room.
Aw.
Thanks, man. That's great.
Or my cup of coffee.
Nice.
I appreciate you guys a lot. I have a serious question versus my normal stuff. I'm cautiously optimistic about the defensive backfield, looking at how criminally mismanaged they were last year, and the total lack of pressure. Is that like, is that out of left field? I think Walker was mismanaged. Poor Okuda got stuck with the top four wide receivers for coverage in the first month and a half. Or Warrior, didn't have a great year, but when you're covering guys for, a minute and a half every pass play, how much of that was his fault?
Yeah, I mean, I think you bring up a great point, Michael, and it's really one of the more fascinating storylines that's going to play out this year, because you're right. Like, I feel like everything went against last year's team in terms of their secondary. I mean, we've had Eric say multiple times how they keep bringing Tracy Walker closer and closer to the line of scrimmage, even though he's better further and further away from it. And then you're right. Like, Jeff Okuda had basically the worst setup for a rookie season, because he was thrown to the fire, because he was dealing with an injury, because he was dealing with a coaching staff that put him on an island a lot. And you just wonder. And now you look at this year, and it seems like everything is set up in the opposite direction. Everything is working in their favor. They've added some guys that can pass rush. They've brought in a coaching staff that focuses specifically on the secondary. Aaron Glenn is very highly thought of, and now there's even some depth there, at least a little bit. And yeah, I think I don't know if I'm high on the defensive backs yet, but I do feel like there is plenty of reason to believe they'll be a lot better than they were last year.
Yeah, I think Michael nailed it when he said that they had the corners were asked to cover for a minute and a half. That was really the biggest catalyst for me in what was holding this secondary back, is when you don't create pressure up front and you're forcing these guys to cover, you can't cover for 6 seconds. It's just not realistic. And that's what they were asked to do a lot of the time. And that extra time in coverage really, I think, made them look worse than they are, because you'll if you look at the all 22, you can see that they're in good positioning, or, they're in the good spots at the beginning of the routes. And then it dissipates. And some of that is because you're asking them to play man quite a bit. And some of it's because, like I said, like Michael said, lack of pressure. I'm with you, Jeremy. I think the split safety scheme is going to give them some help over the top. And that's only going to make the situation better at corner as well. The trick, I think, to the secondary in determining if it's going to be successful is really going to come down to the safety play, because the corners will be in a better spot. The corners have more talent than the safeties. The pressure should be there more than it was, at least in theory, right? So the safeties are my biggest concern, and I guess that's not, that's on brand for us this offseason. But if the safeties play well, that helps the corners. If the pass rush plays well, that helps the corners. But you gotta see how it works at the very last spot, with Tracy Walker and whoever ends.
Ryan, I know you're a big Aaron Glenn fan. Do you have an idea of what you think? Like, if you had to rank the Lions secondary, where you think they finished the year, or maybe what their ceiling is?
Okay, good question. I think that if I were to rank where their ceiling is, I would probably put it like in the 18 to 22 range. Like, okay. I think that like maybe their absolute ceiling could be like just a little bit below league average. But I think that would be a massive improvement. And sure. we talk about how much depth that this team has. It's depth, but it's really young depth, right? Like, I mean, they brought in Quentin Dunbar, they brought in Corn Elder, but beyond that, it's like a lot of young guys. And I think there's just going to be a maturation process. I think that the difference between Matt Patricia a year ago and this defense now is that I think that there's going to be this sense of like actual building and maturing and developing, where it seemed like things were going, like, especially for like somebody like Tracy Walker, we talk about so often, like it was just backwards. De-evolving. It was not great. And, I guess the one question that I kind of have that I'd like to hear, you know, both of you guys talk about a little bit is the nickel cornerback, I think, is probably the most interesting subplot to the defensive backfield for me. I know Eric is really excited and intrigued by what's going on at the safety position, but Lions bring in Corn Elder, but beyond that, like, where else do you see the Lions counting on their nickel corner depth?
Yeah, well, I mean, it looks like Mike Ford might be the other competitor there based on what we saw in minicamp. And yeah, I think that's important. I mean, we when the Lions signed Justin Coleman, we all banged the drum about how important the nickel corner position was in today's NFL because everyone loves to spread them. So yeah, I think you're right. Like, that's an underrated position to look for, and maybe a potential sign of weakness because Lions don't have a ton of experience there. And I think you're probably right, and that's probably where the Lions end up being, is in that just kind of below average area. And I know there are probably a lot of people thinking like, no, this could be a top 10 unit or something like that. But I think the thing to remember here is, one, like you said, there's a bunch of young guys. Two, these guys aren't necessarily that well versed in the scheme that's coming. There's a lot of guys that,
new. Yeah.
This is new for everybody. Exactly. And so, like, yes, I expect Jeff Kuda to take a jump. Do I expect him to take a jump into the top 10 corners in the NFL? No, I don't. Same with Tracy Walker. Like, yes, we know Tracy Walker has talent. Yes, he could potentially be, you know, an above average, maybe even great safety in this league, but it's not going to happen overnight. So I'm with you there. And yeah, with nickel, I think that's another area of concern that should probably temper expectations a little bit in year one of this regime.
So you were talking about ceiling of where this team can reach and keeping expectations in check. If you look at the DVOA of the Saints secondary, when Glenn took over his first year in 2016, their DVOA was 27th against the pass. The following four seasons with Aaron Glenn, they were 5th, 12th, 10th, and 3rd. So it's going to take time, but the turnaround is really fast with Aaron Glenn, and that's why he's gotten so much hype. So, you know, I am expecting a similar path. I believe they are expecting a similar path of having some problems in that first year, but then being able to, you know, get people comfortable in the system, add some more talent to it, and then a quick turnaround in year two. That's kind of my overall expectations of the secondary.
All right. That was a great conversation. Thanks for the question, Michael. Always coming in with the good questions. Let's hit one more before we go to our first break. We got John on the line. John, how you doing, buddy?
Not too bad.
Here.
I wanted to get back on the Green Bay Packers.
Sure.
I guess I look at how much we're going through this year to build our culture and to create the chemistry on the team. And I look at Green Bay and it's like, how can they have any chemistry when your two stars are basically fighting with management and both wanting to leave? I'm thinking, even if they stay now, it's got to be dramatic to that team, doesn't it?
That's a great question, John, because, I mean, I was actually reading some Calvin Johnson quotes this morning from his press conference, and he was talking about how his last season, there were some games, like, he took off. Like, he did not feel it. He wasn't comfortable he didn't want to be there, and it affected his place. So I think that's certainly possible. I guess the question with Aaron Rodgers to me is, how long has this been going on? Because this isn't the first year in which we've heard of his discontent. And he's managed to kind of compartmentalize and play pretty darn well in the past few years, despite obviously some contention in the background. But I'm curious as to what you guys think. Do you think even if Davante Adams and Aaron Rodgers end up sticking around for at least one more year, is there still trouble in paradise behind the scenes that could affect their performance?
I think it would be naive to say no. It's not possible, but at the same time, NFL locker rooms tend to be, you know, closer than, you know, what we see from the outside, right? They mm-hmm. preach family and these are two leaders on their team. And so if they show up, which Adams has said he will, but if they show up, it really depends on how they react. If they say, hey, we're going to make that last run, you know, so if it is like you start at the top, if this is their last dance this year, they're going to want to make the most of it. And so I could definitely see them trying to parlay that into, this is our last dance. Let's make it, you know, let's make the Super Bowl run right here. And then we'll see what happens next year. So I could see it going either way, really. Like, you could see it tear the locker room apart, but at the same time, you could see it unify because they want to, they may want to accomplish something, you know, before it happens. I mean, now that this all gets thrown out the window if Rodgers retires, but,
right.
I think the locker room won't be, because they're veterans and because there's a lot of veterans, and I don't think it'll be as disheveled as you know, we would expect it.
Anything to add there, Ryan?
Yeah, well, I think kind of to Eric's point, like, Aaron Rodgers really seems to me like, obviously, that focused leader that, you know, we always talk about how he's laser focused, he's always prepared on game day. It looks like he's always locked in, dialed in. Like, if this is Aaron Rodgers' last season and he wants to kind of rally the troops, like, this is a perfect way to galvanize everybody, is to just be like, hey, like, this is the last dance. Like, this is the last opportunity that I'm going to take in my NFL career, and it's going to be here, and it's going to be with you guys. Like, what would be a more motivating factor than that? Like, that's just, yeah. I mean, that would be something that, you know, I think between Rodgers and Davante Adams, and, like, I mean, if Davante Adams is cutting off contract talks with the Packers, you know what he's going to do this season, right? Like, he's going to ball the fuck out. Like,
yeah,
he has every incentive to you know, earn as much of that bag as he can. So, like, I truly think that this could be something that could not tear the team apart, but it could, like, truly, truly set them on, like, a warpath.
Well, the positive spin on that from the Lions' point of view, like, yeah, get that warpath out of the way this year while we're still rebuilding, and then we'll see what happens next
yes.
year.
Yes.
But, guys, wouldn't you think, with management's point of view, that wouldn't it be an opportunity now just to get clean house themselves and get rid of everything before they kind of unravel? Like, I'm looking at it almost from a management point of view. I wouldn't want the guys on my team anymore. Maybe there's a chance they're going to play that last mile, but I'm just thinking, boy, you can ship off Aaron Rodgers and get an awful lot for him right now, because there's a lot of teams that'll pay a hefty price for him. But
yeah, I mean, I think you're right there. I just feel like that ship has sailed at this point. Like, I don't know if I think every team is just kind of preparing at this point to play as they are. And I don't know if Aaron Rodgers' value really dips that much if they trade him next year, right? Like, because I think that's what everyone that doesn't think he retires this year thinks that they just part ways mutually next year. And I mean, if he goes on a warpath this year, I don't think his trade value is going down at all.
Okay. Yeah, and I think also to that point, John, is the Packers have already drafted his successor, right? Like, and I think that was kind of like the impetus for, you know, a lot of Rodgers, I guess, problems with the front office, is to see his team move up in the first round to draft his successor. And I get what you're saying, in the sense that you might as well cash in and try to get the most value for Aaron Rodgers now. But at the same time, this is a team that was, like, a couple of bad plays from Kevin King away from making the Super Bowl. Like, I mean, how much do you really want to peel it back? If you have an opportunity to go win a Super Bowl, like, just go do it.
That's fair. All right, let's take our All right, thanks, John. Appreciate the question, man. We'll take our first break here. When we come back, we're going to answer more of your Lions and maybe Packers questions as we head a week away towards Lions training camp. Stick with us.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prof G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prof G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
We're back here doing our Lions Q&A live on the Spotify Green Room app every Saturday morning. Come join us. Make sure you're following Pride of Detroit, and you'll get a notification every time we go live. Let's jump right back into things. We've got Rockne on the line. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that right. Rockne, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yep.
Hey, Jeremy. Hi, everybody. First time caller. My question is, what position group is most likely to send management and coaches into a panic after the first or second exhibition game? And the context I have for this question is, you know, we got new coaches, new players, new offensive, defensive schemes. And if iron sharpens iron, yeah, maybe the opposite's true when we've just got Lions going against Lions and no, cross team practicing going on. What if there's a position group battle in practices where we have like a kind of an average position group masking a really bad one?
That's an interesting question. I think it's a pointed one too, because, you know, the Lions coaches might have some preconceived notions about their players, but pads are coming on, and that's a completely different ball game. I'll throw it to you first, Eric. Do you think there's a position group that might underwhelm in these first week or two of training camp that the Lions might be like, we got to find someone on the waiver wire or something?
I mean, you know my answer, right? Like, I feel like I've been saying this.
Safety!
The safety talent just is not there. But on the plus side, that's arguably where you have two of your stronger coaches, right? So I don't – when Rockne originally asked the question, he said, which one will send the coaches' staff into a little bit of a panic? I actually think those are the two coaches that won't panic. You know what I mean? Yeah. So yeah. While safety is the weakest point, I don't expect that them to get – maybe management will panic and be like, uh-oh, you know, we got to upgrade this Dean Marlowe, Will Harris competition here. But I think the coaches are going to be they're going to be able to adjust. I think there's good coaching at weak spots on this team. But, yeah, the safety is definitely the hole that needs to be filled in a little bit.
Ryan, you have a different answer. I know you definitely agree with the safety stuff. But any other position that might be a little scary out there for the first week or two?
Yeah, I'm pretty nervous about the linebacking. I'm pretty nervous about that group just kind of as a whole. I mean, we know what Jamie Collins is kind of capable of, but then again, we've seen how season to season Jamie Collins can be too. Like, I mean, when he was in a good situation in New England, it was great, and then he went to Cleveland and it was bad, and then comes back and reunites with Matt Patricia in Detroit, like, and things work out. I mean, he seems like such a touch-and-go player, and he's kind of viewed as, like, the linchpin or the proverbial, like, you know, prettiest pig at the fair. But it's like there really isn't a whole lot of depth there. They're counting on Alex Anzalone to play like significant time, and that's a guy who's really dealt with injuries, and there really isn't a whole lot of depth there. I mean, they're almost counting on Jalen Reeves-Maybin to be a contributor when the only thing he's really contributed to is special teams in his career. So I think Rockne brings up a good point about like the opposite of, you know, iron sharpening iron. Like, that's just one of those things where like you could really see the linebacking group kind of get exposed in training camp, whether or not it's dealing with the running backs and routes and things like that.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's a group that I would maybe even argue it's right up there with like 1A and 1B with safety.
Yeah, and I think you nailed it there at the end there. We saw a little bit of it during rookie minicamp of just the running backs just absolutely demolishing the linebackers in route running. And to be fair, that's a tough matchup for anybody when the Lions got two good route runners coming out of the backfield. But I know this isn't quite answering the question that was asked, but I'm kind of fascinated to see what the narrative is that comes out of the matchups between the wide receivers and the cornerbacks, because you look at on paper, you're like, well, we just talked about it. We think the cornerbacks are probably going to take a big step this year, but how big? But when they're going up against what is perceived to be a weakness of the Lions roster and the wide receivers, do we come out of training camp thinking higher of the Lions secondary than maybe they actually are? Or maybe, you know, if the wide receivers dominate early, what's the narrative out there? Is it that the Lions wide receivers are better than advertised, or is it that the Lions secondary is still struggling? What's going on? Like, I always love watching wide receivers versus cornerbacks, but I'm just very interested to see what the narrative will be coming out if one, you know, side dominates the other.
I think it will be whatever the person writing the article will want it to be.
Yeah.
And I'm not lying, right?
Yeah.
Like, because what we saw in spring camp was one day the receivers won the day, and the next day the corners won the day. And it would not be surprising at all to see that carry over, where different days are going to mean different teams are coming up. And in this scenario, when you're only practicing against yourself, you can twist that to whatever perspective you want, right?
True.
And so it's the hard part about writing observations, is that you're complimenting one part of the team at the same time you're, you know, disparaging the other part of the team, and depending on who's reading it, and again, who the reader's involved here too. The reader's going to see that, and some of them are going to say, yeah, great for the receivers, and the other ones are going to say, oh, but the secondary is terrible. Like, it's all about perspective, and so I don't think we're going to get an answer. The narrative is going to be whatever the person writing or reading, you know, wants it to be.
Yeah, that's a really good point, and probably one that people should keep in mind when they're reading observations over the next month.
Unless it's Carlos.
My God, who reads Carlos?
Article today that I actually agreed with.
Okay.
Whoops. Myself.
I feel like you have to for your job, right? Like, that is part of being informed, right?
Rod Wood. Calvin Johnson would walk right past him.
Yep, that is the article that I read. For just so that we're clear, I read, you know, I didn't know that it was his article to begin with, and it was about Kelvin.
They're sneaky.
There's a layup for him.
They're sneaky like this.
I like how you have to admit it, like you like.
You know, I do.
Like a cone of shame.
Like you relapsed or something. Like, I don't know. Like, it just happened. I had no control.
All right, Rockne, thank you for calling in. Appreciate you being a first-time caller, hopefully the first of many. Let's bring in Mike next. Mike, are you there? Mike, you're on.
How about Mike check? 1, 2, 1, 2.
I'll allow it. Doesn't look like Mike is here yet. If you need to jump on back again, go ahead and re-enter the queue. But let's go to our questions from the site, because we had a bunch. We had a whole long conversation there. JFS3 asks, with only 3 preseason games, will game 2 or game 3 be the starter showcase game? Now, obviously, none of us know the answer to that yet, but I'm curious as to what you guys think the strategy might be there, because it's a whole new ball game with preseason this year. Anyone got an opinion on that, Ryan? I'll let you have first crack at it.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, what, traditionally, like when there were 4 games, 3rd game was dress rehearsal, 4th game was the opportunity for all the kind of bubble players to shine, to have their Carry Hyder moment, right? But it's an interesting wrinkle now that you have 3 games. It would almost be safe to assume that game 2 would be the dress rehearsal, and game 3 would you know, take over that bubble watch kind of game. But you know, I'm trying to weigh the pros and cons in my head of potentially pushing that game to have to be game three, but it seems like it just makes more sense for that dress rehearsal game to be game two. But at the same time, you look at, I mean, it's only their second game, right? So, I mean, it's only their second game of the preseason. So I could really see it, I think, going either way.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think one of the things that I think is going to be a factor is how far away are you from the start of the season as well? Like, do you want to see where the starters are on the 21st or the 27th, knowing that you're not going to play, you're playing an actual game on the 12th, right? So if you make it week two as your dress rehearsal, well, you got 3 weeks before you're actually playing a game. That's a long stretch. So
it's a big break.
I'm inclined to say it should probably still be game three, but then at the same time, like you said, that's the dress rehearsal for the bubble guys. And so, you know, you're cutting your roster from 80 to 53 after that game. So you're going to need to know, you know, what they bring to the table. You're going to have just two practices before you have to make that decision after that third game. So there's not a lot of opportunity. So it is really hard to say. I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing, you know, like them using the starters in the first half of week two of preseason game two, and then, you know, maybe use them in the first half again of the third one, because I don't think there's really any, you know, script, and we might actually see like one team using their starters and the other team using their backups, just because there's no script.
There's no precedent. I think You brought up really all the important points there, and I just want to reiterate one, which is that there is that extra week now between the last preseason game and the regular season that I'm not sure everyone's quite aware of yet, and it's going to take some getting used to from fans, because we're used to going straight from the preseason to the regular season, no break, but there's that extra week in there now where teams get an extra week of practice, but we have an extra week to just, like, wait it out, and you're right, and I think that coincides perfectly here, because, yeah, you're right, like, doing that dress rehearsal 3 weeks out or 4 weeks out or whatever it was, instead of, you know, the normal week shorter than that, is a huge deal. You want to blow off the rust, but you also want to make sure you blow it off closest to the season so you don't acquire more rust. And so, yeah, I don't really know. Maybe you're right in that. Maybe they're just like, there isn't this clear dress rehearsal game anymore. Maybe they're just kind of, maybe the starters get a quarter in every game. A full quarter, or maybe they get a full half in each game, or whatever it will be. But I think it's quite possible that the idea of a clear dress rehearsal game might not be around anymore.
Yeah, and maybe it might even be like drives. You know what I mean? Like I think typically, like sometimes in that last preseason game, you'd see like them do like one drive and then they'd be done. Well, maybe it's like three drives. Or, you know, whatever. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how things shake out.
Another question from JFS is, project one player on offense and defense that will make the final 53-man roster that is not currently expected. I feel like we've answered a similar question to this before, but I'll let you guys think on it for a second. I think if I had to project, and this is interesting because I was going through kind of the ranking of the Lions roster, that you know, series that's going on today. And I wrote up on 71 through 80 today, and I looked at a couple guys and I'm like, these guys are really low on the list, but it's possible they really make the team. And I guess maybe my answer is D'Angelo Amos. Like, I'm not, you know me, I'm not a huge UDFA guy, but we know the Lions are shallow at the safety position. And we know D'Angelo Amos was a heck of a punt returner in college. So I think that's how you make a roster, right? Like you find a position that's kind of weak, and you find a role on special teams, and you're there. And so, you know, Amos is behind a couple guys in the punt return rotation right now. But, you know, if the pads come on and he shines, it wouldn't completely surprise me to see him break in.
I'll take a guy on offense to start here. Evan Brown is the mm-hmm. center guard behind right now. He was the guy who took over, essentially replaced Joe Dahl down the stretch. and got a futures deal over the at the end of the season, and now he's, you know, has some competition from some UDFAs, but he's an experienced third or fourth year in the league. He's has some starts under his belt, and he's a guy that I think most people are kind of dismissing because they're saying, well, Drake Jackson has a better ceiling at center, and so he should out he could out you know, pace him, or maybe Tommy Kramer is a guy who ends up making the roster over him as well. But I think we're kind of overlooking the fact that Evan Brown is a very, very versatile player, and he's not someone that I think people are going to be like, oh, we have to keep him. But he's a guy who can play multiple spots on the interior, and that's where there's not a lot of veteran depth. So I think Evan Brown could be one of your final 53 guys.
Ryan, you got any dark horse guys that you like on either side of the ball?
Yeah, my dark horse guy is born out of our conversation we had with Jamal Williams. If you haven't had a chance to check that out, you probably should. But what about Alex Brown?
Sure.
Defensive back. I mean, hasn't gotten a whole lot of playing time. Played for Kansas City, didn't get any snaps in 2020, but played in 2019. And he could be a guy that maybe sneaks his way into the roster as a special teamser. But things go sideways, things go south, and maybe the defensive backfield needs some snaps. But I could definitely see him being a special teams contributor if the Lions want to go that route.
All right, let's take our second break here. When we come back, we're going to close out our final Spotify Green Room pre-training camp edition of the podcast. So stick with us right now. We'll be right back. Closing out here at the on the Spotify Green Room app, Detroit Lions preview training camp Q&A edition. John is back as well, so let's talk to John again.
G'day, guys. Just from maybe similar to your last question, as you had your dark horses, I guess I was just wondering, like, Victor Bolin is one guy I'm not sure if he's going to make the team, but I'm really hoping. There's him and Jacobs are the two players I've got a real kind of draft crush on that I'm hoping are going to make the team and going to be some going to make some damage, I guess, this year, and whether it's on the field, like during the season, like actually make the 53. Is there do you have any sort of crushes on the team that you think might have a good chance to sort of break on the roster and actually maybe contribute this year?
Ooh, your crushes. I love crush talk. Who your camp darlings, your guys that think that and to be fair, the question isn't just, you know, camp darling, a guy who might actually contribute and break through this year. Eric, you got a guy in mind that you think that you, I know you tend to have some good crushes that end up paying out. So I'm curious to see if you got anybody in mind.
Deshaun Hand doesn't count.
it's a good question. And sometimes you get guys that, I guess, show up and you recognize them in the draft, that like Mike Ford. I really like Mike Ford that draft. He was one of my sleeper guys heading into that season. But then there's guys like Kevin Strong who show up like on day two or day three that you weren't expecting. And that's kind of how I feel this year. I don't really have a guy that I'm like, oh, I want to watch him. I think he's got a lot of potential. I'm kind of expecting another Kevin Strong type of emergence from somebody. Like, when those pads come on, how do things change? Does all of a sudden, when everyone else slows down, does somebody else speed up? So I don't have a name that I think really stands out to me. I'm more expecting it to happen. Like I said, sometime by this time next week, I expect to have a guy though.
Well, I have a kind of a follow-up question to that, Eric, and in the sense that, do you attribute there not really being one of those guys this year due to kind of just the huge roster turnover and change that's, you know, that's kind of taking place under Brad Holmes right now, in terms of there's so many new players on the back end of this roster?
Yeah, I think for certain, right? There's so many different players that, you know, you're expecting to step up. It's very possible someone doesn't, and then that creates opportunities, and now all of a sudden you get a guy that you know wasn't on your radar that all of a sudden is. Like, for example, Tavante Beckett, the linebacker, UDFA mm-hmm. linebacker, like, he's a guy no one is really talking about right now, but he also was running with like the second team at one point in OTAs because of, you know, Derek Barnes wasn't in there. And when you look at the UDFA bonuses, like the three receivers got the highest ones, but then Beckett was the next guy. He got the next highest bonus out of the rest of the UDFA group. And that's, you mentioned it earlier, Jeremy, it's not, or you and Ryan both talked about the fact that the linebacker group is not fully settled, and that kind of fifth linebacker might be asked to contribute, and you never know where that's going to come from. And Beckett's a guy who has shown he can play special teams in college. He, when Dan Campbell talked about the fact that if you're 220 pounds, but you can run, you can make it. Well, Beckett's the guy who's 220 pounds at linebacker on this roster. So, like, there's some hints there that Beckett could be a guy that, like, all of a sudden, you know, you're not expecting much of him. But then again, this time next week, we're being like, hey, Beckett's in the mix, you know? And so something like that could definitely show up.
Yeah, all really good points. And I appreciate the question, John. I kind of want to lead it into another question that I actually got via DM last week that I forgot to address. And that's health, because that's usually a storyline going into training camp, is who's healthy and who's not healthy. And it's kind of interesting because, unless I'm mistaken, we don't expect anybody necessarily to miss training camp. I mean, usually something pops up, right? Like, someone's going to start the season on the NFI list or the PUP list, and maybe that just means they miss a week of practice or a day or two of practice, and they're not in shape, that sort of stuff. But unless I'm mistaken, like, basically we're talking to Hunter Bryant, who's, you know, already on a reserve list anyway, so he's not technically even on the 89 roster. There's no one entering the season with a major injury yet, unless I'm mistaken, right, Eric?
No, we ended spring camp looking at the roster that only had like four or five people not participating. Austin Bryant was being held out, and he, I think, would be the real question mark.
Sure.
If you recall, Jalen Reeves-Maben twisted his ankle in the second or third to last practice, but again, they were just keeping him out for precautionary reasons. Akuda and Ratley bump noggins, and so they were kept out, but again, that was just laceration, so they should be fine. Tracy Walker was kept out of the last practice or two, last one, I believe. But again, it was just a simple, like, kind of rest thing. So there was nothing like overly glaring outside of Austin Bryant, because we don't really know what caused him to have to sit, and he has such a long history of being injured and then taking time to recover that he's the one player that I think we need to be accounting for.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see if anyone does show up on those lists. If Austin Bryant does, that's going to be rough. I think Lions fans are going to jump on him immediately. And
you already have. That.
Yeah.
They are. Right. They already have.
They already have. That's fair. Yeah. All right, let me dig back into the questions. We're running a little low here. I don't know if it's the early start time or people, maybe we've just answered everybody's questions. We also can dig back into the Devontae Adams and Aaron Rodgers stuff, because we have a couple questions in our chat from that as well. But let me go to the website a little bit, because I feel like they get shorted sometimes. Ulysses Norris asks, how many of this year's draft class will be getting first team reps in training camp? Let's do a little math here. Two? Just two?
Yeah, right. Well, I guess, I mean, you can count McNeil as three, because if he's a base, right? Like, you're going to get Sewell is going to get first team reps. St. Brown's going to get first team reps. Those are basically locked in. McNeil's going to be your starter at nose. So if you're counting a base, then yeah, McNeil makes three. Onwuzurike could get in there, right? Overhand. So maybe that's four, but I still think, when you're looking at a position that rotates, the the coaches tend to lean with the veteran in the rotation early. True. So yeah, that's why I still think Hand is technically going to be the starter, even if he doesn't see more snaps. So, yeah, I mean, it depends on if you count McNeil's part-time nose tackle role as a full-time starter rep or not. If you do, then it's three, and with the potential to go to four.
Do you think Ali McNeil is there from day one? Like, is
you
do?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Not a John Pennacini fan, huh?
It's not that I'm not a John Pennacini fan. It's that McNeil is just that good. Like, and he does
and
exactly what
he doesn't
want.
Need a two gap.
Yeah, because, well, times he will. At times he will. Like, but McNeil's ability. Okay, McNeil's primarily going to be a one gapper, but his ability to two gap is greater than Pennacini's ability to one gap, right? So when you look at the collective skill set, McNeil's farther ahead than Pennacini is.
Fair enough. All right, we do have a caller back on the line. Oh, we've got a bunch. I missed them all. Michael is back on the line. Michael, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, guys. Thanks for getting me back in.
No problem.
I have what may be a slightly a hot take, but I see a clear path to us being the 20, not this season, but the next season, NFC North champions and possibly Super Bowl champions. Now, hear me out. We identify eight clear NFL caliber starters on defense this season, wherever that shakes out at. So we add two or three in the draft next year, and we've got a middle of the road, 10 to 15 ranked NFL defense. Now on the offense, we know the O-line should be top five. I've got a lot of faith in the tight end room, top 10. Running back room, I'll be generous, top five. So really we're quarterback and wide receiver. Now we know that Aaron Rodgers is a spiteful kind of guy. So he retires this year.
He comes
back next year as a Lion. We have a boatload of cap space that year. We bring in Davante Adams and Aaron Rodgers on our offense. Boom, it's fixed. Top five Super Bowl champions. As an alternative, Tom Brady, we already know Tom Brady's made a deal with the devil. Now, we also know that he does not like being second on anything. So he's the second quarterback to win Super Bowls with two separate teams. So next year when he is a free agent, a University of Michigan man comes home to Michigan and leads Detroit to the promised land. Either way, we're Super Bowl favorites in 2 years. What do you think about that?
First of all, I love it, and I'll have whatever you're having. I don't really think either of those two are necessarily realistic. I'm sure Aaron Rodgers has heard some things about the Lions organization and might not want to come here. But I mean, who knows? I guess the big issue with Aaron Rodgers coming to Detroit is it's clear, like, he has to be traded by Green Bay. He's not going to choose where he gets to go necessarily, and I don't think Green Bay is going to do that. But I don't know. Are either of these scenarios, like, at all within the realm of possibility for you guys?
No. it's fun fan fiction. Michael truly believes that it's 5 o'clock somewhere, right? but I guess to his earlier point, like identifying like starters on the defense that are like NFL caliber players and moving into next season, I think that's going to be really important to kind of go back to, you know, Eric's point that he made about the Saints and their pass defense, and how that was kind of built over the course of, you know, a couple of seasons with Aaron Glenn coaching up those defensive backs. I think that's a really interesting thing to think about, is like how many starters do you think that the Lions will be able to carry over from this year to next year? Because that's the true mark of whether or not progress is being made on this roster, especially during the Brad Holmes retool.
Yeah, and I think it's a good point to be made too, because I think I share in the thought that this team could make a significant jump on defense next year. Like I don't think it's going to happen this year, but yeah, like if they get Okuda into being a starter and find a guy in the linebacking room that can be a starter and continue to develop that defensive line that looks like it's starting to actually come together. Same with the offensive line. Like, it might not be top five this year, but I'm with Michael. Like, it could be a top five unit next year. And so, you know, they could make a significant jump next year. I'm not ready to call them, you know, Super Bowl contenders because of the issues Michael laid out. Like, we don't know what the quarterback situation is going to be like. We don't know what the wide receiver situation is going to be like. And I wish a solution like just bringing in Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers would work. But Aaron Rodgers is not going to happen. It just it literally can't, because even if he retires and tries to come back, the Packers own his rights. They're not going to trade him to the Lions. But a Tom Brady falling in the lap, you know, I think the Lions tend to be like, oh, you know, come back to Michigan where it all started. No, I mean, I guess it theoretically could happen, but I don't know. We'd have to have a front office that it would also believe like this team is ready to compete for a Super Bowl right away. And I don't know if that's where this team is going to be at next year.
Tom Brady's a Cali boy. Let's be honest. Like, if he's going anywhere, it's going to be like San Francisco.
Eric, anything to add?
No, I think the how many starters carry over on defense is a really good question. They've invested in the line. They have the edges invested in for the next couple of years as well, if they're willing to absorb Trey Flowers' contract for the next couple of years. You have good depth at corner that are also, you know, signed for a while as well. But yeah, the real issue becomes, do you have a starting nickel? And if you do, you're going to have to extend them. And then both safety spots, you know, Tracy Walker is the one starter, but his contract is up. And so Marlowe's on a 1-year deal. Harris is an unproven guy. So the safeties might not carry over. The nickel might not carry over. The linebackers might not carry over because Collins is going to have a big cap number. Anzalone is only he's only on a 1-year deal as well. So, you know, hopefully you're having Derek Barnes step up to one of those spots, but you could still have a linebacker spot. So there's still four spots that, you know, a year from now that could be problematic, that unless somebody steps up and you're able to re-sign them, you're still going to have holes in this defense that you're going to have to replace. And that'll be a big point of discussion going into the next offseason.
Jeremy, can I put Eric on the spot real quick?
Yeah.
You should probably ask him, not me.
No. You're the editor-in-chief. Actually, I don't know who. I guess I answer to both you guys. What the hell? So Eric, you mentioned Tracy Walker, this potentially being his last year. Like, if Tracy Walker shows you something, like let's have that be, like, the baseline for his production this year. Tracy Walker shows you something. Like, he's back to kind of, like, thriving in his old role. What is Tracy Walker worth to you in terms of extending him?
I think it really depends on how well he fits in, right?
Yeah.
The better he fits in, the more that price is going to go up.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to be in that, like, so for the Saints just franchise tagged Williams, right? I don't think he's going to be in that conversation.
Right.
For him to be in the franchising type of conversation, he would have to have like a Pro Bowl season, right?
Like 4 or 5 picks, just ball hawking all over the place, making plays. Yeah.
Yeah, like, and you're grading in the top 5 in PFF, and like he'd have to have a tremendous season because this would be the only one that he will have had that much success. So, you know, instead you're probably looking at a guy who's making anywhere from, like, if he has a good season, like a good season that they're saying we want to invest in you, you're talking like 5 to 8 million. Over 4 years, you know, then you give that to him each year over 4 years, is realistic. If, again, he has a good season, if he has an average season, then you're going to get him for less. And I still think that they may still see something in him long-term that they want to invest in. But I mean, I think the potential's there. So I would be willing to give him an extension after a productive season or even an average season. But yeah, it's hard to project the price right now just because his track record isn't great because of the last coaching staff.
And then you also have some other things going on too, right? Like the cap. Like, if the cap goes back up, I mean, John Johnson, somebody who got 3 years, $33 million, obviously Tracy Walker isn't in his, you know, in his neighborhood when it comes to playing, maybe not even in the same zip code. But like, if he does take a step, maybe you see something, like you said, like around like 8, maybe 9 million a year or something like that.
Yeah, if he took a big step, I'd say 8, 9 is his ceiling.
Yeah.
Probably, maybe, I'd be more inclined to say 8.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Thanks for the question, Michael. We probably really only have time for a couple more questions, and suddenly we have a full queue. But let's try to work through as many as we can here. Brett is on the line.
Oh,
Brett, hey, how's it going, bud?
All right, can you guys hear me?
Yep.
Okay. You guys might have addressed this in the past, but I haven't seen anything, and it's been going on like a month and a half. What is going on with the 90th roster spot? They have left it vacant since, what, early June?
Yeah. I can't remember exactly what the move that kind of left that open was. But, yeah, I mean, I think the big speculation, you know, is running back, right? Like, you know, obviously the Todd Gurley stuff has been going on for a while, and he hasn't signed anywhere yet. But do you guys have an idea? Like, there's really no point in entering camp without filling that spot. And obviously there's no hurry to do it when no one's inside the building during the off season and everyone's on vacation and all things like that. But do you guys expect them to fill that 90th spot before Wednesday?
I think so. I mean, I think you'd want to go into Wednesday with all 90 guys there. Now, whether or not I think Eric and you and me, we've all kind of talked about whether or not that position is going to end up probably being running back or safety. Like, it seems like those are the two clear, like, front runners in terms of where they could stand to use some depth. And I mean, if you're following the footprints, obviously the Todd Gurley thing still kind of like hovers over anything that happens with that 90th roster spot.
What do you think, Eric?
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot to add to that. I think Gurley is the reason that they've kept it open, but I could see them going another way to fill it. One thing to keep in mind is that just less than 3 weeks after training camp starts, they're already having to cut their roster down as well. So maybe keeping that extra guy isn't, you know, they just want that flexibility right now.
The one thing I'll add to the conversation here is I kind of think back to the quote from rookie minicamp where they decided not to have a quarterback, and Dan Campbell said something to the like of, we're not just going to bring a guy in here to fill bodies. Like, we're not just going to bring in a guy who has no chance of making the team. That's a waste of everybody's time. So I think there's maybe a chance that they're like, well, we don't really see anybody worthy of that 90th spot right now. So why waste the spot and just give reps to the guys who we think that are on the team that actually has a chance of making the team or making the practice squad?
Okay. Yeah, because as soon as Cam Akers went down, I was like, if they're holding that spot for Todd Gurley, I don't think they're getting him now. But all right, thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. All right, we'll do our final call here with David. David, thanks for joining the show. How you doing?
Good. How you doing, guys? Appreciate you having me on, man.
No problem.
So I'm going to do a little getting a time machine, way back machine here. I'm going to go back and look at November 19th of 2018. Chiefs play the Rams. Somehow they pull it out. Rams pull it out 54-51 with Goff leading the charge. Now, obviously, we're far removed from that season of Goff at this point in time. But my question to you is, how far away is our team from replicating, like, let's say Goff pulls it back, becomes the player that he has, you know, was at that time period? How far away is our team, or what are we missing? What holes are we really missing from our team to kind of replicate that spark that he had back in 2019 or 2018?
Oof. The first thing that comes to mind is a little hole the size of Aaron Donald, but maybe that's not fair to Jared Goff. Ryan, you got an answer there?
Yeah, I think there's a nightcrawler sized hole. Like, where's like, and even if the Lions do end up signing Todd Gurley, it's not the same Todd Gurley he had in 2018.
Right.
But in terms of how far away this roster is from that Rams roster, I mean, you'd have to think that they're missing at least one elite outside receiver, and maybe that's Davante Adams. Come on, let's do it. Let's do it. Let's get crazy.
Eric, what do you think? Is this team within striking distance of that Rams 2018 team? Maybe in a year or two?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think if you're looking at individual games in the NFL, you can see these types of individual games happen anytime, right? Look at week three of Patricia's first year when he beat the Patriots. Like, there's no way that should have happened, right? And so I think we can see these, we could see flashes of it, but I don't think we're going to see consistency for a couple of years.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right, David.
Yeah,
appreciate
I guess I was
question.
Really wondering, like, what? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No. Finish your question. Go ahead.
I was just interested in seeing, like, okay, in regards to that, where was the weighted value of what players had the most impact, specifically, like in that game, like obviously Goff was a big part of it, but I think they had some defensive scores in that game as well, and I know that Aaron Donald's not something you can go and just replace. You know, yeah. But like almost like a mini list cast, like what would be the three things that would bring us back to like relevancy if they could find, okay, in the next year or two, what are the three major things they need to focus on to get us back to that spark? If that's a big if Goff brings it back.
Right. Yeah, Goff had 4 touchdowns. Ubukam had 2 defensive touchdowns for them. I think he had a pick 6 and a fumble recovery for a touchdown, if I recall.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess to answer the question, like I think I would go with Ryan in that you need a number one type receiver. Brandon Cooks had 107 yards in that game, and obviously he was a big reason for Goff's success in Los Angeles. A premier pass rusher. I don't care what position he plays.
What did Todd Gurley do that game?
Todd Gurley only had 55 rushing yards.
What about receiving yards?
39.
So you're telling me we just need DeAndre Swift. Sweet. Hey, we're a lot closer than I thought.
Okay, one of three pieces. An established running game certainly would help, but I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's necessary. I think you can succeed in this league without one. So I would say a number one receiver, an elite pass rusher. Romeo Okwara is doing good things, but he's not an elite pass rusher where, you know, he's just causing offensive linemen stress during the entire week lead up to the game. And then, I don't know. I mean, I tend to be a defensive playmaker guy. And even though this game was 54-51, there were a lot of big defensive plays in this game as well. So if Okuda can, I think, come into his own and be a lockdown corner, I think those three pieces would be the three key pieces to kind of be that contender level team that they could take down a behemoth like Kansas City.
Cool.
Anything
Thanks
I'm missing?
A lot, guys. I appreciate it.
No problem, David. Is there anything that I missed from that list, Eric or Ryan? Or are we done?
No, I think we're ready to ride out. I think it's time for training camp, baby.
Love to hear that. All right. Well, then with that, we'll close things out here. There will be a training camp preview podcast Monday night live on our Twitch channel. It'll be up on the podcast feed Tuesday morning. But until then, for Ryan, for Eric, thank you all for joining us this time. Join us next week on the Spotify Green Room app. Until then, it's chaos. Be kind.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special 3-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
More to-dos, less time, and an infinite number of tools to keep track of. Sometimes doing business has never felt harder, but you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You can just use HubSpot because their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: high-quality leads, fast closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle. It's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.